Here next from Catherine. Catherine is a senior researcher at the Work Foundation. She's been leading their work on low pay and in-work poverty, which I saw Catherine nodding her head a lot in the two talks around this increasing issue of not just unemployment but underemployment. And so you've been leading a recent review of employment and poverty for Joseph Rowntree as well, and so really looking forward to hearing some of the thoughts that you've been having and the results you've found.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. Thanks for inviting me. Very pleased to be here. So far we've been talking about raising wages through increasing take-up of the living wage. The other approach, I think, which is needed at the same time is also to focus on the individuals in low-wage work and then helping them to move to progress out of low-wage work into better-paid work. And that's what I want to focus on in this presentation. So, I guess kind of despite the title on the programme, I don't see this as an alternative to the living wage, but things that need to be pursued kind of alongside the living wage strategy. So why is it important to focus on progression? Well, firstly, because the share of low-paid jobs in the UK is unlikely to be reducing in the near future. Low pay is quite an enduring feature of the UK labour market. So around 21% of the workforce at the moment are in low pay, and that level has kind of remained more or less constant since around the late 1990s. So whilst there are ways of increasing employer take-up of the living wage, as we've been discussing, it's not going to make a huge impact on the share of people in low pay in the near future, so we also need to look at ways of moving people out of those low-paid jobs. Secondly, because not only do we have a high share of low-wage jobs in the UK, but we also have considerable persistence of low pay, as Jonathan was talking about in his presentation. And that's, so, you know, low pay is not necessarily a problem if it's just at the start of your career and you move out of it relatively quickly, but if it lasts for longer periods of time, then it is more of a problem in terms of poverty in later life and child poverty. So because we have that persistence of low pay, it's important to focus on progression, enabling people to progress out of low pay. And thirdly, there's also an increasing policy spotlight on progression at the moment, especially with the introduction of universal credit and in-work conditionality. So that means that once universal credit comes in, once individuals move into unemployment but they're still not earning enough to move out of universal credit completely, there will be an expectation they'll have to continue to increase their earnings either by looking for more hours or a better paid job. So the question of job quality and how people progress their earnings are becoming increasingly important in policy circles as well. I've got a couple of kind of background slides kind of setting out low pay kind of issues generally, which I think I'm going to skip over quite quickly because Jonathan's given quite a lot of detail on the picture in London already, with more detail, more up-to-date data actually. So this was just kind of to point out who experiences persistent low pay. Jonathan's already talked about the particular sectors involved. Maybe just to focus on the final point on the slide, which is kind of thinking about what the kind of the more the structural drivers are to low pay, because I think that's quite important in terms of thinking about what the solutions might be. So in terms of kind of what's driving persistent low pay, you know, more widely, it's really related to long-term structural changes in the labour market. So the kind of the shift to a knowledge-based economy and that kind of hollowing out of the labour market, so jobs expanding at the top and at the bottom but reducing in the middle, which makes it much more difficult for people to progress out of those bottom-level, low-paid jobs. And also, Jonathan talked about the sectors that low pay is concentrated in. So it's very much concentrated in a few quite labour-intensive sectors of the economy that are operating in quite price-competitive markets. And so there's a tendency for some employers in those sectors to operate on the basis of quite low-cost, low-price business models, often referred to as kind of low-road business strategies. So that means that low pay, these kind of companies don't just have low pay, but also have quite poor working conditions, often using flexible contracts. We talked about zero-hours contracts. So these are the kind of business models that a lot of employers in those sectors are using, and so I think that's one of the things that we need to think about and focus on. Again, I'm not going to talk very much about this because it's already been covered, but just to point out that, you know, while we know London is a high-skilled economy and it can act as an escalator for some groups of people, so young, highly mobile graduates who come to London are much more likely to progress than they are in other parts of the country. So London does have higher rates of progression and other parts of the country, but it's also got an extremely polarised labour market. So lots of high-paid jobs, lots of low-paid jobs, and that limits mobility for the least skilled people in the London labour market. And also the costs, obviously, are much higher in London, so housing, childcare and transport costs are particularly high. And the wage premium for low-wage jobs in London isn't the same as the wage premium for high-wage jobs, so people in low-paid in London are particularly affected by high costs. So, in terms of what are the kind of policy levers that can be used to promote progression, so there's two main areas that I think we need to focus on. Firstly, support targeted at individuals to support their progression through making the employment and skills system more joined up and more focused specifically on progressing out of low-wage work. And secondly, support targeted at businesses to enable them to develop and more effectively use skills within their workplaces. So in terms of the first kind of policy area, support targeted as individuals, the existing skills and employment systems, support systems in the UK aren't at the moment well suited to enable people to move out of low pay. So firstly, the adult skills budget has been cut back quite substantially in recent years and has become much more targeted. So most of the money is for people who are either out of work or who lack basic skills. There's very little funding available for people who are already in low-paid work to access skills support. Secondly, employment support provision is still primarily focused on helping people move into work. There's still not very much focus on the kind of jobs that people take and what the earnings are like in those jobs. So kind of information, advice and guidance for people who are already in work is still very limited. And thirdly, employer involvement in the skills system also remains quite limited despite recent government attempts to kind of promote employer ownership. So people who are in low-skilled work, low-paid work, are much less likely to receive training from their employer, and many of these employers don't see any incentive to invest in the skills of their workforce. So at the moment, there's very little support for people in low-paid work to enable them to progress out of that work. So two kind of things that we think kind of really need to happen, two areas for action. One is developing more structured career pathways within low-wage sectors and also providing better access to training and advice to enable people to move out of those sectors into better paid sectors or better paid occupations. So in terms of the first one, developing better progression pathways within low-wage sectors, career ladder initiatives, career ladder schemes offer one option that can be effective. So a career ladder scheme is an initiative that maps out a sequence of jobs within either an individual firm or within a sector, and maps out the skills and abilities that are needed at each stage of the ladder, and then designs a sequence of training courses and qualifications that enable people to take those jobs and move up the ladder within the sector. So it can involve just making an existing career ladder more transparent to people so they can see what the different steps are, or it can involve creating additional steps on the ladder. So it might mean creating additional intermediate level jobs so that people can more easily progress from one rung to another. So these initiatives are quite common in the United States, but they haven't been used that extensively in the UK at the moment. In the US, they're usually delivered through a partnership of community organisations, training providers and employers. And the employer involvement is really crucial because the point is that it's about bringing together training providers and employers so the training that is developed actually fits the career pathways that are in the workforce, in the labour market. There are limitations to those kind of initiatives as well. They depend a bit on the employment structures that you find in different industries. So if you have a very kind of bottom-heavy labour market employment structure with lots of jobs at the bottom and not many jobs kind of in the middle, which is characteristic of a lot of the low-wage sectors, then it can be quite difficult to implement these kind of initiatives. And they've tended to be more successful in sectors like healthcare, social care and manufacturing, and have been less successful in some of the kind of low-wage service sector industries. But that's one example of kind of initiatives that have been used quite widely in America and can promote more structured pathways for progression within low-wage sectors. And so as well as developing those more structured career pathways, the other thing that's really needed is training and advice targeted at low-wage workers to enable them to progress into better paid jobs. And the evidence at the moment suggests that the best way to move out of low-paid work is actually to change sector, to move to a sector that has higher pay. So the evidence from in-work employment initiatives in the US suggests that support's likely to be particularly effective if it focuses on placing people in high-quality jobs that have opportunities for progression. So one programme in the States that was particularly effective targeted individuals who were already working in low-wage jobs and tried to enable them to move into other jobs that were higher paid. So it relied on the provider having very strong links to local employers in a variety of industries that had good quality job openings. So it's very much based on kind of high quality labour market intelligence. What are the growth sectors? What are the, you know, what are the sectors within the economy that have opportunities for wage progression? So really the lessons from these kind of initiatives are that people in low wage work need access to high quality careers advice and guidance that's really tied into kind of high quality labour market intelligence. What are the areas they should be moving into if they want to look to earn higher wages? And services also need to quite proactively target low wage workers who have very limited access to information, advice and guidance at the moment. So we do have a national careers service in the UK, but it's the kind of awareness of the service amongst people in low wage work is very limited and eligibility is also very limited. So that is really a kind of a challenging agenda, I think, because at the moment the kind of systems aren't set up to target people who are in low wage work. So there needs to be, you know, there would have to be a lot more outreach through employers and through other organisations to be able to market such a service to those workers. And in terms of the second area of focus, is around kind of targeted business support. So that would encompass support to businesses to enable them to become more competitive, more productive, by more effectively developing and using the skills of their workforce to kind of move up the value chain, if you like, to move away from relying on those kind of cost competitive business models and focus more on investing in the skills of their workforce and potentially producing higher value goods and services. Again, a very challenging agenda. I'm pretending this is an easy thing to do. But it might include things like business advice services, so having advisor specialists around how to improve business strategy, how to change business strategy, move into a different kind of niche within the market. Or it could be various types of incentive schemes to promote employer investment in skills. So there could be various kinds of tax relief schemes or co-financing of pilot initiatives. Also initiatives to develop leadership skills and build HR capacity, particularly in small businesses, very important because making changes to business practices very much depends on the quality of kind of leadership and management in small businesses. And we know that in international comparisons, the quality of management skills in the UK is quite low. And also peer-to-peer support amongst businesses is very important to promote the uptake of good practice, perhaps through business champions or mentors. So there are, you know, currently there are a huge range of business support initiatives available at national level, regional level and local level, but they lack coordination. And a key challenge is really engaging with kind of the low performing businesses. Those businesses I was talking about that focus very much on cost minimisation and don't invest in the skills of the workforce and wouldn't necessarily proactively seek out business support services. So such a service couldn't just be responsive to business demand, but it would also have to be quite proactive to try and raise employer aspirations within these low-wage sectors. So it would have to be well-targeted, focused on priority sectors for the local area, where there is perhaps some appetite for making changes, but further support needed. So there's potential for LEPs to play a greater role there in terms of coordinating that kind of support at the local level. So, you know, cities could work in partnership with kind of business partnerships and representative organisations in order to encourage better practice. There are examples of schemes. Again, in America, there was one in Chicago called Workforce Chicago, which kind of brought together businesses to kind of award and publicise best practice in workforce training. So businesses had some kind of award if they invested a certain amount in training. There's also possibilities to try and spread these practices through procurement, you know, maybe using the Social Value Act. But as you say, it's challenging enough with the living wage. So, I mean, how much you want to kind of pile on employers through that kind of procurement approach is something, you know, that would be interesting to discuss. And I suppose the living wage is quite specific. You know, whether employers are paying the living wage or not. Some of these practices are quite kind of vague. It's how do you define them? But you could think about developing some kind of kite mark around good practice that could be used to award businesses locally. And maybe say that, you know, you needed to work towards the kite mark if you wanted to contract services from the local authority, for example. So I just want to finish then with kind of opportunities and challenges. I mean, there are lots of opportunities at the moment to take this agenda forward. It's kind of on the mainstream political agenda, as I mentioned, with the move to universal credit. It's also on the agenda of many LEPs around the country. And with greater devolution to local areas, there's more funding streams available. So, for example, LEPs have now got strategic direction over the European Structural Investment Funds, and career progression has been prioritised in the London ESIF strategy. So that provides opportunities to trial new initiatives, and I think that's really important because there isn't really very much robust evidence available regarding what works in terms of promoting progression in the workplace. So it's important to trial things, have some evaluation alongside them if possible, and also important to share the learning from existing initiatives because there are quite a lot of initiatives that are either underway or planned around the country. And it's important that everyone can learn from that good practice and find out what's working in other areas and not duplicate, you know, any mistakes that have been made. So there's a variety of initiatives already underway. There's a wage progression pilot in Plymouth, for example, as part of their city deal. There's various initiatives under the Skills Support for the Workforce programme and the Local Response Fund, and the DWP have got a series of pilots around universal credit. So there are quite a few interesting things going on at quite an early stage. I think it's important to kind of bring those together and share some of the learning from those. And I finally just, I suppose, wanted to kind of raise a question, which may be something we want to discuss, I'm not sure, about the limitations of what can be achieved through, I guess, an essentially voluntarist approach appealing to employers to pay the living wage or to, kind of invest in the skills of their workforce. And I guess how far can that approach go, really, in terms of tackling low pay, if that's the title of the seminar, Tackling Low Pay in London. So I guess if you look at countries around the world that have much lower levels of low pay, it tends to be some of the European countries that either have very high levels of collective bargaining or have a much higher level of the minimum wage. And so I guess there's a question about whether we also need a much more kind of strategic approach in the UK to tackling low pay and whether that involves more regulation is obviously a difficult argument, maybe not one we want to have today, but I think there are limitations to what you can do through kind of encouraging employers to act on what we might think are their better interests. But obviously, the evidence is that so many employers who are paying low wages and operating on those very kind of cost minimisation business models that obviously just work for some employers in particular sectors. So I didn't want that to sound on a negative note, but just to kind of raise the question of kind of the best way of tackling this issue.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Catherine.